By springtime in 2002, it felt like I'd been given a reprieve. Harrison's staph infection stopped once his port was removed, and Bryson emerged from his first fragile months into a sturdy and healthy baby. He was nursing so steadily that I had extra milk. This gave me an idea. I decided to give my surplus breast milk to Harrison. I had read that breast milk was the best nutrition for balancing the immune system. I'd also read that the fat in breast milk could help in repairing the myelin sheath, which is the protective covering around nerves. Harrison's immune system had chewed away at his nerve's myelin sheath, which contributed to his severe nerve pain. I thought my breast milk might help compensate for some of the damage. I began expressing milk every night and putting it into Harrison's feeding tube. Watching the milk slide into the tube, then into him, I hoped for even the tiniest miracle. Harrison and I had been through so much together and had a wordless, profound intimacy. I loved him beyond measure. My breast milk was also a potential lifeline for the rest of us. Once I got both boys physically strong enough, I could take all my children and escape. Bryson was thriving. The real challenge was Harrison. I had to get him stronger. But I also had to teach Harrison to swallow. He'd done it for the first year of his life, but once he got sick and had a feeding tube, he stopped. My goal was to get him to swallow something every day. The initial weeks were hell. I'd put food in his mouth, he'd scream and spit it out. Pizza was my salvation. It had once been Harrison's favorite food. Finally, after 3 weeks, he swallowed a tiny bit of pizza. I was elated. It took 4 months, but Harrison finally began to eat different foods, and he became voracious. I was so relieved. He'd been so starved by his cancer, infections, and spasms. Harrison began to seem happier and more stable. There were days when I felt overjoyed, but I hid it. No one could know what I was thinking. One afternoon in early spring, I asked Kathleen to help me take Harrison for a walk when she came home from work. It had been another day of constant screaming because of his spasms. Kathleen told me what people had been talking about all day at work. Warren Jeffs had kicked more than 100 teenage boys out of the community within the past month. "It's such a shame that so many mothers are producing so many unworthy sons," she said. "These children are choosing rebellion over doing the work of God and supporting our prophet." I was speechless. I had been so consumed with Harrison's care that I didn't realize teenage boys were being kicked out of the FLDS in significant numbers. How could any mother bear knowing that her son was being abandoned into a world he feared and had no skills to face? Since birth, these boys had been taught that the outside world was evil. Now, because Warren Jeffs said so, they were hurled out of the FLDS and told never to come back? Jeffs had our community in a chokehold. I noticed that people's faces now seemed devoid of expression. It was as if they were afraid even to look like they might be thinking. The life seemed drained from their faces. They acted as if emotions had been outlawed. I never knew what was coming next. One day all the dogs were rounded up and killed. This had a harrowing effect on children who were attached to their pets. Oreo was our family dog, a cute black and white mutt that Luann adored. When Merrill heard that the order had gone out to seize the dogs and destroy them, he told one of his sons to take Oreo to Paige and put him in the pound. This was devastating for my children, even though Oreo didn't die. Luann was heartbroken. Merrill told the children that tears were not allowed. They should only be concerned with doing the will of the prophet. One of the ways I could measure the change in our community was at Linda's coffee parties. I'd been too engrossed in Harrison's care for the last year to get to any. I was excited about going back and eager to see what women were talking about. One woman said she thought all the cell phones in town were bugged. This prompted someone else to say, "Whatever you do, don't drink the punch," a reference to the mass suicide in 1978 in Guyana when 900 followers of Jim Jones drank a cyanide-laced grape punch. What was most unsettling was that families could be torn apart for no reason, or reasons Warren would never reveal. A man who wanted to get rid of a wife could now march into Warren's office and know that even with the flimsiest complaint or accusation, he would be likely to get a fresh start with someone else. The old prophet, Uncle Rulon, finally died on September 8, 2002. He was 94 years old and had more than 60 wives and more than 70 children. Warren Jeffs proclaimed himself prophet almost immediately and married his father's wives. Now he was in absolute control over all our lives.